is admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. So Judy, we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say on that. We're going to get you turned around so everybody can see you.
Okay, good. Hi, Jerome. Good evening, everybody. If you got me turned around yet?
There we go.
What are you guys doing over there? Nothing? Look, how many people does it take to turn a computer around? About four, huh? Over there?
Almost as far as it takes.
I'm going to have to come and straighten that group out, I'll tell you.
Promises, promises.
Yeah, I know. Soon. I'm not making any more promises. I'm just going to show up. Oh, my goodness. Step five, huh? That's the step that comes immediately after four. Why do we have to do these steps? I think that's important. What are the steps anyway? Why do we even have these crazy things? Well, if you're like me and you had a problem with drinking and you weren't able to put the drink down, even when you wanted to, then you needed a solution for that. Because if you were like me, every time you drank, or most every time, you ended up in some kind of trouble and you could not predict the outcome of the evening or the drinking bout, or sometimes it would last longer than one evening, huh? And you begin to think that you're crazy because you ask yourself two questions. Why can't I drink like normal people, whatever they are, because I didn't know any? And why can't I stop drinking now that I want to? And you find yourself kind of a prisoner to that thinking and that negativity. And boy, you do some things that you never thought you would do in order to protect your stash, in order to have the world believe you were all right. You were like pretending to be something you're not. And you end up with a lot of guilt and shame as a result of some of the actions you took while you were drinking. And in my case, some of the actions you took when you weren't drinking, just because you were nuts. So I think for me, steps four and five were a way to put the past sort of to rest. And that's like, I heard this in a meeting. It says your past was only a lesson. It's not a life sentence, so stop being a prisoner. Now, you can't do this until you have a look at it. So we had a look at it in step four, didn't we? And if you're like me, you found out you had a lot of anger. You were angry at a lot of people and a lot of things as you began to write your resentments down. You were probably like me and said, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I was so angry. So now I can't find where my anger quote is. I'm going to find it. And I was surprised how really upset I was at so many people. Okay, here it is. So, in my opinion, I would say the definition of anger is this. It's a punishment we give ourselves for someone else's mistakes. Huh. How does that work? Well, somebody does something that is painful or harmful or hurtful to you, and we get angry and we carry that, don't we? We get resentful. And not only do we feel that instance of pain or anger, we feel all of the pain and anger from similar situations that happen throughout our life. Let's just take, for instance, we're going to look at, last week we taught, I shared with you three resentments that were on my first four step: my mother, the IRS, and an ex-husband. So we're going to look at my mother. And I told you my mom was an alcoholic, and so her behavior, her actions were alcoholic. They were very sick. But I didn't know she was an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic was, and that's the kind of family I grew up in. And I just really hated her. I hated what she did. I hated the things she said, and so I became a victim of that. And that was the punishment of my anger over her sickness. How crazy is that? And I started thinking I had no worth because she said things that were demeaning and very painful to me. And I couldn't seem to shake them. I didn't have a lot of good role models. I didn't have aunts and uncles that stepped in and gave me another kind of way of looking at myself or life. It was a difficult time growing up. And then when I grew up and tried to get out in the world, I had that experience. And boy, everything that I learned from growing up in that house really was, it wasn't necessarily the reality or the truth of how things really were. It was just based on a very sick household. But again, I didn't know that, so I carried all this anger and resentment, and I became a victim, and I knew that the way I acted and the things I did and the trouble I got into and the drinking especially, I did all of those things because these people hurt me. Huh? How crazy is that? So I'm going to kill myself because they hurt me. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense now when I think about it. But at the time, it made perfect sense. It was a solution. And then the solution became the problem, you see. And then when I gave up drinking, when I came here to AA, I still had the problem. I'm still angry. I'm still a victim. I'm still suffering with punishment towards myself for someone else's mistakes, for someone else's sickness. Why is that? That's a hard way to live. I can't be happy, joyous, and free in that kind of environment. And so the steps are the solution to that problem. And we will fall back into drinking and using if we don't take the steps. It's just that simple. Not just take the steps, but apply them on a daily basis in our life. I promise you, you'll go back to whatever it was you were doing before you got here, and it'll be worse. Because it's a progressive illness. It doesn't get easier, it gets worse. And I don't know that because of personal experience. I know it because I've known a lot of people that have gone back out and then come back in the rooms to tell me how awful it was and that it was worse. And so you don't have to believe that, but I would hang around and just kind of pay attention to what people say when they go back out and then they come back in the rooms, if they're fortunate enough to get back here. We've lost out in this past month, we've lost three beautiful women here in my area. And I just heard that another very vibrant young man over in your area lost his life. So let's not have any of that. Let's stay. Let's hang on to each other. Let's walk this journey together. So I told you last week, my sponsor just had me fill out the list of resentments, do column one first, do column two second, and column three third. And then her and I would sit down and we would go over this together. And that's what I did. My sponsor gave me 2 weeks to complete my fourth step. And included in that was not only the information on page 65, but it also included a list of fears. Now, she just had me write a list of fears on a sheet of paper. And I did that, and I was surprised the number of fears that I listed. I was afraid of spiders. I was afraid of success. I was afraid of failure. I was afraid that I was going to drink again. I was afraid she wasn't going to like me. I was afraid you weren't going to like me. I was afraid I was going to die tomorrow. I was afraid that I wasn't going to take good care. I was afraid of everything. So she just had me write a list of the fears. And then I explained last week also, she had me write a list of people that I had caused harm to because of my sexual conduct. A real hot topic here in AA. Now, you don't hear it so much in a mixed meeting, and I can understand that. But we certainly have discussion meetings about sexual conduct in our women's meeting, and I'm sure that you discuss it in your men's meeting. And so I explained to you that I had to have an overhauling of my understanding, and I had to learn some truth about sexual activity and what it was really supposed to be, because I had no idea. When you grow up in a house where your mom is crying because she's being beaten behind closed doors, and then the next day everything's fine and it seems like they're hunky-dory, well, you become a little confused about what is what and how things work. And I also talked last week about how not only I, but many of the, I'll say all of the girls that I sponsor, when I ask them where did they receive their sexual education, they told me from their friends, just like me. Now, that's kind of silly, isn't it? I mean, their friends, my friends didn't know anything more than I did. Maybe a couple of things, but geez, Louise. They could no more describe what a healthy sexual relationship was than the man in the moon. And sometimes I work with younger men. They come because I'm kind of like a grandma here to some of them, and they ask me, you know, some questions relating to sexual conduct. And I ask them, where do you get your sex education? And it's from their friends. Well, aren't we all just doing good here, you know? We don't get our education from a knowledgeable, skilled person or someone who has any experience with healthy sexual conduct. So how else are we going to behave out in the world when all we've gotten is misinformation? Well, we're going to be misbehaving. Yeah, because we don't know a better way. Everything that I am today, all of the things that are important to me, all of the character I've been able to build, it's because I've been able to sit with you folks who have so patiently and so lovingly and so without any judgment have walked me through a lot of life's processes with nothing but truth. And you've given me considerations and options that I can perhaps try to apply to my life. And you've helped me to unlearn all of the things that were in error, and you've helped me to learn the things that are true. But I didn't even know there was an option for some of these truths. So I'm very blessed to have had the old-timers help me through this. So I'm just going to go across the line. We're going to do my mother first. So I told you it. Who am I resentful at? My mom. Why? Because, well, I didn't know this at the time I did my inventory, but I said, I didn't put down that she was an alcoholic and behaved in a sick fashion. That is not what I wrote. I wrote all the things she did. You know, she hit us. She beat my siblings. She made us fearful. She said, I wish you had never been born. She belittled me. She would call us names. She tried to commit suicide and made us sit there and watch her take the pills. And she said, we're not, she ripped the phone off the wall so we couldn't call 911. That's what my mom did. That's what I grew up in. It wasn't like that every single day, don't misunderstand me, but when she got on a roll, holy mackerel, she was a terror. She was full of shame and guilt and remorse, and I didn't even know it. I thought she was full of hate and just didn't want us around. So what did that affect in me? It affected everything. We talked about the three instincts, the personal instinct, you know, how we interact with others and what others think of us. So kind of our self-esteem, and then our security as far as financial ability to live, to have food, water, and shelter. And everybody needs these. These are God-given. We have skills and we have the ability to do these things for ourselves. But because they spent a lot of money on booze, many times we didn't have money for shoes or we certainly didn't get any new clothes. And it was rough. It was really rough. So it affected my security, and it certainly affected my the sex instinct, because everything that I learned was in the error. So, but I didn't know that it affected my sex instinct at the time I did my first four-step. I didn't think that had anything to do with it. That's how little I knew. Thank goodness for good sponsorship. So my sponsor said, well, she said, so you've been carrying this around for how long? And it's pretty heavy, isn't it? And doesn't it stand in the way? Doesn't it affect the way that you interact with others? You know, how is it that you're able to trust? Well, yeah, I don't trust very well. And how is it that you think that you're not able to think very highly of yourself? And she helped me to see these things, that it was creating problems for me in my life, big problems, more than just carrying around anger. It was affecting my life in such a negative manner. And then she said, so she said, you told me your mom drank. Is it possible that she's an alcoholic? It's very possible that she's an alcoholic. Yes, she's been in blackouts. She's had DWIs. Of course, because she probably is. You know, I can't say that she is. Only she can say. But if I had to say, I would say yes, she is. And so Mary said to me, she said, so you have a lot of women friends in AA. Yes, I do. And she said, you know so-and-so, and you know, this one, and you know that one, and you know their story, and you know what they did with their children, and you have forgiven them. And you have a relationship with them, and you're not holding a grudge towards them, and you're not resentful at them. What is the difference? Well, that was hard for me to look at. Well, you see, I'm self-centered. This is about me. Look what she did to me. Look what she did to me. And Mary said, look what you're doing to her. How would she ever be able to come to AA with you acting like this? You know, when we say the responsibility statement, that's what we mean. We don't mean we want to be there for everyone except your mother. And how could she behave in any other way? Because you couldn't. You couldn't when you were out there. You see, and so this opened up a whole mess of things that I had to now consider and think about. How am I ever going to get past this? I can't just let go of all this anger. I've been using the excuse that I'm the way I am because of what she did. What am I going to be? Who am I going to blame? And Mary said, that's it. You can give up the blame. And you can stop living in the past. And you can move forward with the future. You can't change the past, but you can change the future. You can do things differently. And so, I had to look at that. And I was unwilling, I knew what came after 5. I knew 6 and 7 were sitting there, and then 8. And I knew that on the list of resentments, those names were going to be transferred on to 8. I'm already figuring it out. I'm way ahead of myself. And I'm knowing that she, my sponsor in the future, is going to say you have to forgive your mother. And I wasn't anywhere near it. But that isn't what she said that day. She said, we're gonna give you an actionable suggestion. So we're going to go to the book, and it says, we realize that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. And in the case of my mother, she was not only spiritually sick, but mentally and physically sick as a result of drinking. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. Oh, my goodness. And it goes on, not exactly here, but, let's pray for this person, and let's pray that they could have every good thing that we want for ourselves. And so I did a lip service, and I said, yes, I'll do that, Mary. And here's what I said. Here was my prayer. Dear God, please let her die. Let it hurt. Let it be very painful. Let there be a lot of blood. I mean, I was 3 years sober, and this is the way I felt. This was how devastated, how hurt, how all about me it was. Huh? But I honestly, I could not see that. And I prayed that way, and I prayed that way, and I don't know how long it was, months. And the angst, the pain, the horrible, horrible anger just subsided a little. And a little bit longer, it subsided a little more. And it took me 12 years of sobriety. So this was year 3 when I did this first inventory. And at year 12, I was able to make amends to my mom. But we'll get into that another week. I'm just telling you, this is a process. It can be fast for some people, depending on your circumstances, and it can be a little slower. But it helped me in so far as the anger lifted, and I wasn't allowed to be a victim anymore. And Mary only wanted to hear what was I doing to be in the solution rather than to be in the problem. And so I had actionable things that I could do to change my behavior and my thought process. It just took me a little time. So let's go on to the other one. Who was my other one? My mom forget who I had. Oh, alrighty. Yeah, the ex-husband. Oh, dear God. So I could go on and on. So I put his name on the first column. I put all of the things, all of them. And then the third column, what did it affect? It affected everything. It affected, you know, the way people saw me. I mean, what am I doing with this guy anyway, you know? Why is he acting that way? He's embarrassing me in public, for crying out loud. He's not treating the kids well. And that's affecting everything. And he doesn't work. And so it affects my security. But I knew he didn't work when I married him. Oh, imagine that. And sexually, yeah, I'm telling you, this guy was a real goofball. But here's the honest to God truth. And I again blamed him. I was victim. Because of the way he acted, I had to be this way. I just thought that was how you lived. And of course, Mary sat me down and she said, you know, you and I kind of both know the truth about this one. And she said, you never wanted to marry him in the first place. You see, what happened was he walked into a meeting and this was after I, you know, turned my will and my life over to the care of God, and I was looking for a partner, and I knew in my mind that God wanted me to have a partner. New in sobriety, don't we know this? We're looking, right? And in he walked, and he was getting his fifth divorce, and I said, he's sent by God. For me. I know exactly. And I just kind of, you know, made a little clearing up, you know, and kind of got behind him in the coffee line and started talking. And next thing you know, he's moving in. And the next thing you know, we're going to get married. And I'm telling you, the month prior to the, and this was very fast, I'm talking a couple of months. Oh God, I can't even stand thinking about it. And so I am, Carrie, I'm blaming him for everything. But I knew that I should not marry this man. And I married him anyway. And my father walked me down the aisle. And my father had a hold of my arm. And he said to me, please know you don't have to do this. If you believe this is a mistake, we'll turn around and we'll walk out of this church right now. And you have nothing to worry about. And my pride, I said to him, I know exactly what I'm doing and I want to marry him. And I did not want to marry him. I wanted to turn and run as fast and far, but I could not. And I married him and I blamed him for everything. And the things that happened in that marriage were so devastating and so painful, not just to me and to him, but to my children, that at the end of that, trust me, I was completely and totally giving everything over to the power greater than myself. It was terrible. Mary even said to me, she said, if you go through with this marriage, I cannot sponsor you. I adored Mary. And I said to her, if you call that love, you can stick it right where the sun don't shine. Only I didn't say it in such nice words. And on the day of the wedding, she called me early in the morning. She didn't quit sponsoring me. And she sang, here's what she sang. Go into the chapel. And we're gonna get married. Oh my God, I wanted to hang up on her. And she said, what's the matter? This should be the happiest day of your life. Yeah. So she had to come and help me through the divorce and through all the craziness that happened as a result of me wanting what I wanted when I wanted it, no matter what, and having the audacity to think with a couple years of sobriety, I could actually know what the good Lord wanted for me. Dear God, huh? Crazy, crazy. You see, and here's the thing. Nobody said to me, oh, look how stupid you are. They said, Judy, have a seat. Have a seat. Relax. Do you need me to get you some coffee? How's the kids? How's the kids holding up? Is there anything we can do for you? Yeah. That's what you said. And so I said to myself, to God, I said, listen, I'm probably the biggest crazy woman that you've ever had to deal with, but if there's supposed to be a man in my life, he's just going to have to come and knock on my door, because I'm done. I can't do this. I don't know how to. I'm done. And my youngest son, about 6 months later, got a big brother, and that big brother was my late husband, Jim. And he came to the door to pick up my son. And the rest is history. We were together 31 years when he passed, and I took care of him during, we took care of each other during those times and learned much from each other. He was also in AA. But when he became really ill at the end, I took care of him at home, and he died at home. And that was probably the best privilege and the most spiritual opportunity that I've had since I got here in Alcoholics Anonymous. So when they say, you know, we have to be careful what we think of, you know, as a intuitive thought or intuitive direction or guidance from this power greater than ourselves, we really do. And I would highly, highly recommend, before taking any action, do have a conversation with your sponsor. And I guess I share this because an important thing that Mary said to me early on, she said, Judy, you know, you don't have to be afraid of making mistakes. I mean, that was a huge mistake. That was so stupid. But, and I wish I hadn't done it, but I can't change it. But she said, I said, Mary, why would I want to make a lot of mistakes? And she said, because that's the only way you can learn. And she said, people that don't make mistakes are not doing anything. They're not trying anything. They're not stepping out of their comfort zone. Now, she didn't mean that in the context of marrying somebody that you know you shouldn't marry. I don't know what you call that except insanity. That really helped me. And so I haven't been afraid to make little mistakes. And I really hope that I don't let pride stand in the way. I don't believe I do. And when it crops up and rears its ugly head, I can pretty much know what's going on, and I can change my behavior kind of quick. And I'm very grateful for that. After these years, I finally, you know, am in tune with that, I think. I'm trying to remember what the third, was it the IRS? What was my third? Yeah. I had it written down somewhere. Right.
IRS.
What was it?
IRS.
Oh, yeah, the IRS. This is an easy one. So the IRS, the reason I was mad, because they audited me. I'm just a little nobody. And the result of the audit was I got fined like $1,200. I didn't have 2 cents to rub together, and I was so angry. Well, I lied on my return. I put things, I said, I know who's laughing. I said, I bought a new car, and I had, you know, the I don't know why I did this. Well, I know why I wanted the money. I needed money. I probably wanted to maybe take the kids on a vacation or, you know, buy him something nice or, I don't know, not so. And so I got audited, and I remember oh my gosh, you never want to walk in and take all your tax returns and sit down with an IRS guy and have them say, well, do you have the receipt for the car you purchased? And you have to, you know, own up to the fact, no, I didn't buy a car, you know, and you're sitting there all, you know, full of self-justification, huh? Self-centeredness, how dare you do this to me? I don't make a lot of money. Go audit somebody with a lot of money that they steal more from, you know, nuts, crazy. So what did that affect? Well, it affected the way people are going to see me. My God, they're going to find out I'm a cheat and a liar and I'm trying to steal from the government. Oh, my word. And remember what Mary said. It's okay. You can do whatever you want as long as your actions and your words can be on the front page of the newspaper. Well, don't think that wasn't in the back of my mind, for God's sake. That would be terrible. I'm, you know, everything at risk here. But why? Because I was too lazy maybe to find another way to earn money? Oh, my God. I don't know. I just was so sick. You see, and those are just a couple of the many things that were on my first four step. So you can see Mary directed my thinking completely around to what's going on here. With the IRS, it included fear of never being able to provide adequately or maybe a little better for my children. With Tom, with my first husband in AA, who was my third husband. You don't have to have a lot of husbands to or wives to be a member of AA, let me just tell you that. Save yourself a lot of grief and aggravation. Oh, boy. But it just came out to be that what I was looking at was selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, self-justification. I did not have the ability to look at other people and maybe their struggles, their sickness, only myself. So now the work begins, the actionable things that I can do to change this. And yeah, that's when you really have to put some hard work into this. We put quite a lot of work into the 12 steps and trying to change our life up until this point. But there's lots more to do and lots more to experience on this path of recovery. When I was done with my fifth step, because my sponsor was so wonderful that she shared with me all of the crazy things she did. And I found out that I wasn't unique and that actually she had done a couple of things that were as crazy as mine. Oh boy. Why can't I? One little second. You know, at meetings, we always hear the promises being read, and I like to remind everyone there's promises after all the steps. And so I'm going to read the promises of the fifth step. Okay. On page 75, second paragraph, it says, once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, here's the first promise, we're delighted. We don't have secrets anymore. We don't have hidden, self-centered, justifiable kind of actions. It says we can look the world in the eye. We don't have to be afraid anymore. We can be alone in perfect peace and ease. It says our fears will fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. These are all promises. Sounds pretty good to me. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The relief is just I can't explain it. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. And here's the best one. We feel we were on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Now, those are pretty good promises. Those are promises I want to have in my life. And I did feel delighted. I felt relieved. I felt such relief. And in the following days, I felt a calmness and a peace, really, that I just hadn't known up until that point in my sobriety. And then the next paragraph goes on to say, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, and we consider what we have done up until this point, meaning the first five steps. And we just make sure that we haven't omitted anything, that because of pride or fear, we've kept some twist of character or some dark secret to ourselves. And Mary had me do that. And I called her and I said, we're good. Nothing has come up that I think I have forgotten. And, you know, I think we can move on. And she said, great. And I think I told you that we met on a regular basis. So the next time we met, and I don't remember if it was a couple of days or a week, but the next time we met, we went right on to the next step, which is step six. So we're going to do six and seven next week. That is, you know, that's pretty much what I got on step five here for you tonight. I hope that my experience helps somebody. That's it, Kevin. That's what I got for you guys tonight.
All right. Thank you. So we have time for a couple questions from our speaker. So if you're here in the room, you want to raise your hand, or if you're on Zoom, you can just speak up. Does anybody have a question for Judy? There we go.
I do. Hi, Judy. I'm Leslie, alcoholic, and thank you for speaking to us tonight. But it was kind of interesting. I remember my first sober husband, which helps when you're sober, but I've never heard anyone say it except you, but I remember just clearly having the thought, walking down the aisle to marry this man, thinking, now I'm going to need a lawyer to get out of this. And I, like you, I did not turn around. But what happened was, I've come to figure out what it was that moved me forward. And my first sponsor would talk to me about whenever there was something like that I was doing that didn't make sense, there was something in me that was pushing me towards it. And I was wondering, what was it within you? I mean, I know myself, I was afraid no one would marry me. I was reaching X years old and blah, blah, blah. So I was wondering, you know, did your sponsor talk to you about looking at relationships like that? And what was it in you? I mean, the guy you described sounds like really a loser that you should have run like hell from. So what was it, because that's what I found out about me, you know, and she's strong on the victimhood stuff, too.
Well, see, the first two husbands, neither one of those worked either. I mean, they didn't work. They weren't employed. So this was a step up because he was in AA. I was thinking that my children needed a role model. Now, do you believe that? That they needed, you know, a man. This person just was very sick, and he was anything but a role model for anyone. So, yeah, just not so. Thanks.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Maybe one more quick comment, or one more quick question. Anyone?
I got a quick question.
Go ahead.
Can I go?
Yeah.
All right. Just a quick one. I didn't think I had any resentments, but then I started thinking of myself when you said the IRS. I had the resentment towards my job when they fired me after 10 years for my drinking. Do I have to, like, go in and, like, do anything with them?
Have you taken a fourth and fifth step yet, Chuck?
No, but, like, if I wrote...
Well, you're getting ahead of yourself, baby. Do you have a sponsor?
No.
You don't have a sponsor?
No, not yet.
Well, darling, come on now. You need to get a sponsor. Can you do that between now and next week?
I'm working on that. But I'm in the process. I want to get a sponsor and everything. But, you know, I want to work the steps and everything. You know, I'm just trying to think about it all. That's all.
There you go.
Well, that there is like a big problem. Quit thinking and start doing, honey. I'm so glad you're here. It sounds like you're the reason maybe I'm here. It's very important to have a sponsor.
Yeah.
Well, see, Chuck, here's the thing. I don't know about you, but I know this to be true for me. My best thinking got me here. So how can I rely on my thinking to improve my life? That's kind of crazy, isn't it? So I have to have some help. I have to have some guidance. And I'm glad you're here because you can get some guidance here, but you can get more personalized guidance with a sponsor. So I highly recommend that for you.
All right, thanks.
God bless you. I hope I see you next week. Well, you're at home. You're on Zoom. Oh, dear God, help me. I was going to say maybe I'll see you at the fire hall if I come over there.
I've been attending Zooms every day so far, so.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. God bless you. All right, honey.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Judy.
You're welcome.
Okay.